Thank you. And so maybe you're asking, what is this old lady doing up here talking about Gen Z? I get this a lot. Don't worry. But like he said, we are from dosomething.org. And that is the largest tech platform exclusively focused on young people and social change. We have over 5 million members taking action in their community every single day. And those members are between the ages of 13 and 25. And we're in every area code in the country, and we're in 131 countries worldwide. So it's quite a rich database of young people that we can engage with. And we have engaged with them on virtually every digital platform you can imagine. We've tried them all, and successfully and unsuccessfully, believe me. But the biggest way we engage with young people is texting. We text with nearly 3 million young people every single week. And so as you can imagine, we have a ton of data, a ton of insights, a ton of learnings, and a ton of experience since we've been around for over 25 years. We were founded by Andrew Hsu of Melrose Place. Anyone remember that? Okay, good. I'm not the only old person here. The kids in our office, they're like, they have no idea. They're like, who's that? I'm like, what, are you crazy? And he's still lovely and delightful and looks like he's 25. Anyway, so we have a lot of insights, a lot of experience engaging young people. And so we take that learning and we help other organizations activate their own cohort of young people for social good. And that's what Do Something Strategic, the social impact consultancy arm, does. And we've worked with some of the biggest and smallest organizations and not-for-profits out there. The common thread through all of these is they're looking to engage young people around purpose. And the other good thing is that we're unique in that we are nonprofit. So any profit we may make goes directly back to dosomething.org's mission to create the most socially conscious generation ever. So, pretty cool. But who exactly are young people then? What do we know about young people? What have we learned about them? And I'm sure if you read any of the headlines, you might think, good God, Gen Z is killing us all. Certainly they're killing every industry out there. They, you know, don't buy napkins anymore, and they don't, you know, subscribe to English. I mean, the whole thing is just so whack what's out there. And hell, they're even having less sex. So, I mean, they're really just, they're the worst. But really, we attribute some of this to what we and many, many others have coined as juvenoia. And that's really just subscribing to a belief that, you know, a younger generation is worse simply because they don't understand them. And so often what we get when we talk to young people today, or pardon me, talk to organizations today, when we ask them, so what comes to mind when you think of youth? Thankfully, it's not a lot of those headlines. But they often do think of this, right? They think of, wow, this is the generation that's standing up in big, big ways. And that is true. I mean, Emma Gonzalez, an amazing woman. Greta Thunberg, as you guys probably just saw, a 16-year-old Swedish girl. I mean, really, they're doing some incredible things. But to be fair, there's also this. There's slacktivists, too. There are people who are apathetic, you know, people who don't want to do shit. And that's fine. Neither of those things describe what, it's not Emma Gonzalez and it's not that dude on the couch who can't even be bothered with picking up a Cheeto to put in his mouth. Neither of those groups describe the core of who young people really are. And that's what we call vice presidents and followers. Everybody exists on the fringe, and that tends to be what gets the most attention. But the core is this group in the middle, and that's what dosomething.org is really all about. We want to activate the majority of young people that live in this space. And when we look at the majority, and this is a great, great study from Vox Media, if you haven't seen it, the majority of teens are actually pretty fucking amazing. I mean, they are. They do drugs less. They have sex less. They fight less. I mean, they really are an incredible group of young people, even if they're not on the sort of fringe of the Emma Gonzalez and Greta Thunberg. So a really incredible group. But what does make them different? They are still unique in their own right. And so we've seen that they are the most diverse generation ever. 46% of young people today identify as a race or ethnicity different than white. 46%. That is huge. But it's not limited to those two parameters in terms of diversity. 52% also believe that they identify as either completely homosexual or somewhere on the bisexual spectrum. That is a majority of young people we're talking about here. This was a study of 13 to 20-year-olds. And it's not just sort of the gender and ethnicity, it's also family types, right? 46% are living in a family with two married parents in their first marriage. And that's down almost 20 points from the 1980s. So all of that is really, really special. And what makes this generation different gives them a lens through which they see the world in a unique way. And part of that leads to why they probably tend to reject labels. 51% believe gender is a spectrum. 56% of young people know somebody that go by the pronouns them, they. When it comes to political affiliations, they don't want to be labeled. They don't need to be ascribed a party, a political party. So the plurality of young people are unaffiliated or independent, which is really interesting because I think a lot of people believe that young people are Democrats. And while they do have a sort of more liberal perspective on many, many issues, that's really a reflection of a societal shift than it is a sort of political ideology that they want to subscribe to. And even back in the day when I was a young kid, I mean, it was so uncool to think your parents were cool. It was just like, parents just don't understand. And so truly, this is such a great statistic for me because I have an 11 and 13-year-old, and 72% consider their parent their best friend. I mean, that is pretty cool. And yes, they are incredibly socially aware. When we asked young people who should be responsible for solving the world's most pressing problems today, the plurality said citizens, we. We are responsible. And make no mistake, they walk the walk. 67% have volunteered at least once in the last 12 months. That is huge. And you saw it just last week. Over 1 million people worldwide, young people worldwide, came out for the Climate Youth March. I mean, a really big deal for young people, but a really big deal for them to show their activism in a very real way. And why do they do that? Well, in part because they give a shit. We know that. But it's also because they want to feel part of something bigger than themselves. They want a community of like-minded people, of people who share their values, and they want to feel like they belong. So great. What does all that mean to me, you might be thinking? Why does this matter? Well, part of it is sort of helps shape how they move through the world, and certainly how social media sort of then helps them move through that world. And can we just take a minute to look at this? This is my favorite GIF of all time. He's just living by the rules. Don't hate him. So rule number one, meet them where they are. We all know it's mobile or bust. This is not new. But it's not just about having their phone and being on their phone. It's also about how they use that phone and how that is a part of an extension of who they are. We call this fight for the user, and this is painted on our wall at dosomething.org because it's so important to remember that it's not about what we want, it's not about how we want them to share our social post, it's about what they think is valuable, what they want to do. And so part of that is really understanding who that user is. I'll give you a great example of this. Several years ago, we ran a campaign called Teens for Jeans. The number one item that young people ask for when they go into a homeless shelter is not socks, it's not underwear, it's not even shoes. It's a pair of jeans because they can wear them to school. They're timeless. You can wear them several times before they start to look dirty. I think we all know we don't wash our jeans after one wearing. They're seasonless. So this is a really core staple to what young people ask for when they go into a homeless shelter. And we thought, well, we can help with that. So we asked our young members to get involved. And we did that through an email. We said, hey, sign up for this campaign. We'd love for you to help out your fellow teens who happen to be homeless. And we got 89 signups. We were like, this was sort of typical. And this was several years ago. But we also started to notice how young people were deploying SMS and using it as part of their sort of daily communications. So when we sent the same exact message out via SMS, we got 3,500 signups, and we got those within minutes versus the email, which we got over the course of a week. Since then, we have obviously shifted a great amount of attention to SMS. We now text with 3 million young people every week, and it has consistently outperformed email anywhere between 11 and 40x. And the interesting thing about that is it does not mean that email is not effective. It just means it's not effective at driving action. So email still has a place in our ecosystem. We still email with 4 million young people every single week, and we have seen 13 to 18-year-olds engage in our email, and by engage, I literally mean open, 2x. It has gone from 6% to 13%, but interesting to see 13 to 18-year-olds doing that. So it's still part of our communication ecosystem, but text is super critical. But here's what text isn't. If you're using text this way, it's a total facepalm. Text is not about pushing out a message. It's about creating a relationship through a conversation. And when DoSomething.org texts, you have a relationship with us because it comes from Freddie. Freddie from DoSomething texts every single week. And people love Freddie. People wish Freddie a happy Thanksgiving in the tens of thousands every single year. It's such an interesting thing. And even though it's all automated, Freddie's real. I mean, Freddie does head up our mobile experience and audience development, but it's all automated. Freddie's not reading every message. So it's really interesting how powerful text can be when used effectively and not just a push message, but a push-pull. And so I'm sure, as you can imagine, there are new properties every single day, and I'm sure you have tried these. I will tell you, WeHeartIt is not our biggest platform. We don't have a ton of followers on WeHeartIt at DoSomething.org, but I can tell you that they are our most engaged users across all platforms. Really, really interesting. It's sort of like a cross between Instagram and Pinterest, but in any case, that is very much a community of commitment or committed individuals that really engage on a platform. And so, look, every time I give this, I'm like, oh shit, which one of these don't exist anymore? These change every day. And this is not to suggest that you need to be on all of these. These don't necessarily make sense for your organization. They didn't make sense for ours. But it's certainly not none of these. And this is just obviously a handful. So it's really about understanding what social really is today, and it's not all Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or Bust, or Pinterest. So it's really about understanding where they are and how they use these platforms. Let me give you another example of this. We know that trillions of water go wasted every single year just through taking showers. And we thought, okay, how can we combat this? How can we get young people engaged via a social platform around this issue? Well, we also knew that young people are huge users of Spotify. And so we thought, how can we connect these two dots? So we created a campaign called Shower Songs. We asked young people to create a 5-minute playlist, something they do all the time on that platform. And that platform is not merely about listening to music, it's about sharing that music. So we said, share that with a friend and encourage them to take a 5-minute shower and tell us how it went. And obviously we're not asking for pictures of them in the shower, but we say pics or it didn't happen, and we ask some questions about sort of why they got involved. And when they sent it back, they were like, oh, my friends and I had a competition to see if we could get it done in a minute. And oh, you know, I had no idea how long I was taking in the shower. It literally only takes 3 minutes to wash my hair and shave. So, I mean, this was the type of stuff we were hearing, so we knew they were doing it. And it was a really valuable use of that platform because that's how they use it. And of course, we changed this up on September 4th. We all know what September 4th is. Beyonce's birthday. So we ask everybody to shower with Beyonce every September 4th as a way to make this campaign fresh again and relevant. And obviously, as a singer on the platform, I mean, it's just a huge, huge use of how we engage. And so we have had over 500,000 members and counting participate in this campaign over the last few years. Really, really incredible. Here's a great example of somebody who is using social in a really relevant, smart way. It's not just about putting an ad on the platform. That's not meeting them where they are. It's about being engaged in the platform in the way that they're using it. So The Body Shop was conducting this campaign called Help Reggie Find Love. The campaign was literally about how deforestation had created these gaps in the forest that then, these large gaps, that then monkeys, this particular breed especially, would not cross because it was exposing and they were threatened. So they were smart enough not to put themselves in that situation. So they didn't cross, which meant mating was down significantly in this population. So they were going to help fundraise for a bridge, a literal bridge that would allow these monkeys to cross safely. And instead of just putting an ad on social, they said, oh, well, this is really about mating, and we want to engage young people, so let's go on Tinder, and let's make the platform, let's create a profile for Reggie and help him find love. And so when people swiped right, they could learn more about this initiative and they could donate through the platform. It was really, really great. Rule number two, use influencers with the right influence. This is big. I think we all know that influencers matter today. This is nothing new, and I think there was even some sessions on it. But really what we call influencers might be a little different because we believe it's a parasocial relationship, a one-sided relationship with celebrities and their fans. That's not an influencer, right? That's just a celebrity. That's just somebody who can spread your message. Let me give you an example of this. We did a voter registration campaign this past year. We registered over 100,000 first-time voters under 25. And that was really, really huge for us because it's not even our full-time job, and we were among the top registrants of young people. And a large part in how we did that was we tapped influencers. And we tapped people like Adam Levine of Maroon 5. Young people love him. They think he's lovely. They think he's cool. They've got his poster on their walls, I guess. I don't know. But we also talked to this guy, Jovan. So we created these pages for both of them so that we could track where they were coming from in terms of their voter registration. And for the record, we love Adam Levine. He's a big supporter of DoSomething.org, so this is not to dog him. But let me just tell you that Jovan, he had 25,000 Instagram followers, and he talked about sex and weed a lot. So this is not your typical influencer, right? Like, this is not... But we saw that this guy actually had influence. People listened to him. People did what he said. And people really were engaged with everything he put out there. So we said, hey, can you work with us? We'd love for you to use that power for good and talk about sex, weed, and voting and registering to vote. And he took that seriously. He was like, I am in. I think that's fantastic. He was like, I'm going to get more than Shawn Mendes, who was another celebrity we use on our campaigns, and he's lovely too. I can tell you, he got 300x the amount of voter registrations than Adam Levine. And I will say, in the first 8 days, he got over 100x in the 8 weeks that we had Adam Levine doing it. And that just continued to grow. So huge, huge influencer, even though he's a virtual nobody in the world of celebrity or influencer space. That doesn't mean that celebrities and sort of these macro influencers can't be influential. We all saw that with Taylor Swift. I mean, she had a huge following and activated them around voter registration. But I will say, this was a very thoughtful message. She had not come, it was very different than Kim Kardashian saying, go out and vote. This was a very, it was a timely message. She hadn't really talked about politics. But in any case, point is it's a diamond. It's a gem. It's not the norm that this will work in this way. It's more the norm of people like Jovan, that it will work in that almost every time. A great example of a brand that's doing this is Clean and Clear. So Brooklyn and Bailey on the left, so cute. My kids love them. They have like 5 million YouTube followers. I mean, they're huge. And Clean and Clear has been using them for their campaign around, you know, face products and acne and whatever for a long time, and they're great. But they also started to appreciate the value of these, like, low follower influencers, the ones who aren't just about pushing an awareness but actually driving action. So they tapped this guy, Dylan, who had his own nonprofit. It was like a sewing. He would sew clothes for homeless people. He was a really sweet kid. Has virtually no followers, 1,500. And they asked him to do a video around, the video pushes product, like, it's no big secret. I mean, he's washing his face with Clean and Clear, and then he's showing his nonprofit work. That video got over 4 million views. Now, I'm sure Clean and Clear put money behind it, don't get me wrong, but they also saw a 19% sales increase when they added Dylan to the mix. 19%. So it's really about using the influencers that actually have influence and appreciating that the other ones help drive awareness. Rule number three is leverage FOMO. I mean, it's not new that peer pressure works. We've all known this. We've all experienced it. It still happens today. But I can tell you that FOMO can be leveraged for good in many, many ways. And so we did this campaign with GM called Ride and Seek. It was all about safety, car safety, wearing your seatbelts. I mean, can you think of anything less FOMO than rider safety? I can't. I mean, it's just so boring. But we said we can figure out how to make young people care about this. So we created these posters. And it doesn't have to be, like, salacious. Is that the right word? I mean, this one is, but it's really just about understanding that young people are like, oh, I want to be part of that 72. Like, what's going on here? So anyway, we had these posters, and the answer for all of it was seatbelts, and so it was really about everyone's doing this, so you should do it too, buckle up kind of thing. But really the interesting part was that we asked people to post it on social, and we asked people to print out these posters and hang them up in school too. And we saw huge engagement on the poster campaign, which we had dedicated analytics just for that. And it was so, so interesting to see how young people wanted to engage in this campaign beyond just FOMO and sort of letting people know that we're tapping into this idea of, like, other people are doing it, you should too. It was also this poster campaign. And part of that was driven about was how when we showed people printing out the posters, more and more people did it, which is why we use our community for FOMO. We use our community platform to create this sort of peer pressure of, like, well, I want to be part of that too. We post pictures of what everybody's doing so that everybody else can see it and say, A, that looks easy. I can collect a box full of period products for homeless women and trans men, or I can swab my cheek to help find a bone marrow match for cancer, or I can collect genes or just run a genes drive at my school. Whatever the sort of initiative is, they think, I can do that too, but they also want to sort of show it off, and they want to be part of that community. And the more pictures we show, the more engagement we get. And that's using peer pressure for good. Rule number four, this is another great gift. This cat, respect their privacy. So you might think posters, so 1990s, what the hell? True, and frankly, we weren't even sure, like, do young people have access to printers? Is that even a thing now? I mean, yes, they do. As a parent, I said, yes, they do. Printers are not obsolete. They're not only in workplaces. But we also knew that posters would be an interesting choice because asking young people to post something on their social, which we did too, we asked them to post that message on their social, but we knew that was going to be a high barrier ask. That poor rabbit, poor little thing. So we knew it was a high barrier to ask them to get to post on social. I mean, you see that with the rise of Finstagram, right? This idea that they have two social media accounts. There are people who in our office have Finstagram accounts. The Finstagram, oddly, is the real them, right? It's the one where it's the one on the right where it shows how they really look, how they really behave, versus the one on the left, which is highly curated. They have learned to some degree, sort of from their older millennial peers, that you can't necessarily or shouldn't necessarily put everything, your whole life online. That can come back to bite you, but they also have a very sort of important sense of self that they want to curate and put out there that's critical to understand if you're asking them to post something on social. That's a big deal. That's sort of like we'll say, I'm cool or I'm not cool, and they're not necessarily willing to sort of expend their social capital on your initiative. So asking them to post on social is just not necessarily always the way. And it's also interesting to see how privacy is so important because we see that even messaging apps are the ones that are on the rise. Even Facebook. Facebook Messenger is more popular among Gen Z than Facebook itself, right? It's a private, one-to-one, one-to-few exchange. That's why Snapchat works. That's what Instagram DM is, how young people largely communicate with each other. It's not even necessarily via SMS anymore. It's also via Instagram DM, direct messaging. So really, really interesting to see how important social has evolved to be less about social and more about private communications. We've even seen that just last week, The Atlantic came out with this really interesting article about how young people are using Google Docs. Now, some of that is just like the new way to communicate in class instead of passing a note, but it was also being done at home. It was also just a way to communicate that was more private because your parents aren't checking your Google Docs the way they might be checking your Instagram. So it's just another way of them, ooh, some weird bug, looking for, I hate bugs too, some new way of looking for ways to communicate in a more private setting. We have seen that it's also the way they want to raise their voice on important issues. When we ask them, how do you want to get involved? Social media is number six. That is not the way Gen Z wants to communicate and push out your message. And I can tell you that over the 270 campaign initiatives that we have on our site right now, and they're for on every cause from, you know, cancer to Islamophobia to recycling, we have a campaign for anything and everything that young people care about. And the ones that have the greatest engagement are the ones that have an offline action. So yes, meet them where they are. Yes, we engage them digitally, but we push them to act offline, and that can be way, way more powerful. Which leads me into the last rule, which is really about using social to activate your base. We all know that purpose matters to this generation. That's like every report under the sun says this matters, and we see it every day too. It's a great time to be working in the field of young people and purpose. It's just fantastic. I'm inspired every day. And if you're a business that is either hiring Gen Z, which, you know, Gen Z is like 23, 24 right now at the high end, so we work with a lot of organizations, including PwC. I think PwC is here, sort of around sort of employee engagement, employee recruitment. So if you're doing that or you have consumers that are Gen Z, it's really important to appreciate that checkbook philanthropy doesn't do you any favors anymore. Because young people are saying, I want to be a part. I want to do this with you. Remember, we talked about community and the value of the importance of shared values and creating a space for them to feel like they're part of something bigger. That's what they're telling us now. And whether that's consumers or employees, they're saying, that matters to me. So if you're just donating behind the scenes, great, but it's not getting you any points with an important cohort. So it's sort of like, it's not an either or. Yes, continue donating. That is critical to nonprofits for sure. But it's a yes and. It's, hey, give that $1,000 grant around new sports equipment and ask young people to get donations from their community around gently used sports equipment because they can help too. And it doesn't have to be about money. Another great example of this, and this was a campaign we did with ESPN. Another great example of this is a campaign we did with H&M. They have been a sort of, as a fast fashion brand, they really have been committed to recycling clothing and textile waste for a really long time. And in the UK, their initiatives were huge. But in the US, no one really knew. So they really wanted to make sure that they engaged their consumers around this issue so that it wasn't just about them doing it, it was about their sort of brand ambassadors doing it too. And so we created a campaign that encouraged young people to come to H&M, bring any kind of textile, and anyone can do this. This isn't a campaign, it was just how we activated our members, but it's every day at H&M where you can bring, whether it's an old, you know, linen tablecloth or a shirt that has a rip in it. It doesn't matter, you bring it in, and they will recycle it. And I can tell you that in 8 weeks, and we tend to run our campaigns for a short amount of time, it really creates that sort of time pressure, the sort of time to act. We collected over 341,000 pounds, which was more than 240% than the entire previous year. So it really is about making it fun, making it simple, and getting them involved. Another way we did this with PVH, which owns Tommy Hilfiger and Calvin Klein, they had been donating to World Wildlife Fund for years, right? Checkbook philanthropy, they had been giving a lot of money, which is wonderful. They wanted to keep doing that. Of course, we encourage that. But we also said there's a way to get your employees engaged in this and rallied around this issue that where you as an employer get a benefit too. And so we created the PVH2O challenge, which was a 3-week challenge around water sensitivity and water conservation. And asked people to submit on their platform. They have a platform that they use, an internal communications app that they use. And we had people submit, again, picks, or it didn't happen, so we encouraged that. And then they used these all throughout the organization. And then six winners won a trip to India where they could see the work that they were doing around river conservation in particular. And a brand who does this really, really, really well is United by Blue, which is a growing brand, super popular among young people. They not only, for every clothing they sell, they take a pound of trash out of the waterways, but they invite their consumers and their employees, but largely their consumers, to do it with them. And they just celebrated, this is a very new brand, they just celebrated their 10,000th consumer volunteer. 10,000 consumers have come out to help them clean the waterways. What? I mean, incredible. So then this past summer, they did a Blue Movement road trip where they had a whole plan to hit 27 states. So it was just really incredible, and they are committed to this. Another high five is Lush. This is the number one brand among young people that aligns with their values. Lush. We just did it two surveys in a row. Lush comes at the top. And they are committed to not only sort of being environmentally conscious, but also, I mean, they represent every issue under the sun. I mean, they were attacking the police in the UK for surveillance, unnecessary surveillance. I mean, they really cover the gamut. But they also fund their consumers' initiatives to get engaged in any way they want as well, which is really, really special and unique. And they get brand loyalty for it. So the five rules to live by: meet them where they are, use influencers with the right influence, leverage peer pressure for good, but respect their privacy, and use social to activate your base, not to just spread awareness, because that's going to be the most effective use for it. We have a weekly newsletter about young people and social impact and marketing that comes out every Tuesday, so you can subscribe to that through text. You can text TMI, too much information, to 38383, and it'll automatically subscribe you. It'll ask for your email, and we won't text you again. That's not how that works. And that's it. Any questions?
Any questions?
All right.
Again.
Oh. Well, it'll build as long as you make it fun and easy and simple. Well, easy and simple, same things. And you're not asking them to do something that you want them to do. You're asking them to do something they find valuable. So the first thing is to ask them, how do you want to be involved in this issue? We didn't just create a competition for PVH. We talked to their employees and said, what gets you excited? We're like, oh, they loved it when they had they were retail shops, so inter-retail competition for like who's going to sign up the most credit cards or whatever it was. And they really get jazzed about that. They love to be the winning office. So that's, we're like, we can leverage that. We can tap into that spirit of competition for this, for good. So I would say it's really about understanding who you're really trying to get them, who you're targeting, and then asking them, how do you want to get involved? Because so many people just want to get them involved the way they want them to be involved. And oftentimes, the way you want to get them involved is the least engaging to them. I mean, it's like, this is a big thing with not-for-profits in particular who are looking to drive donations. Young people today think donations, it's not that they don't have the money, I'm talking millennials, but they think it's not a good use of their money. They would rather give their time. They would rather push out a petition, which will actually change the law. There's a whole list of things they find more important than raising money. But we all know that the organization knows what to do best, so raising money is the best thing. That's going to be the thing that drives the most change. But you have to sort of tap into what they find valuable and then cultivate them along the way.